Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the land-grant university in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report. It is the 21st day of May, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. And a bit later in the program, Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, will be here to take a look at the cash grain situation, and we'll discuss the weather forecast as we close out our time together with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. Don't forget, you can always find our programming online anytime you'd like on demand at WILLAG.org. It's WillAg.org. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Near the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon, futures in the corn pit and the July contract up 5 cents for the day. September 371.5, up 4.75. The July by way at 365. December 382.25. That was up 5 for the afternoon. March futures at 392.75, 4.75 cents higher. And the May contract at $4 even, up 5 cents on the day. Soy complex bean futures July contract 938.5, down 2.75. August at 929.75, down 2 cents for the day. And September at 920.25, that finished a half lower. November beans at 918.5, down 1.5, rather down 1.25. And January futures at 925.5, a penny and a half lower. Bean meal at 304.10, down 40 cents. The bean oil up a nickel at 32.25. Chicago soft red winter wheat, 9 cents higher at $5.22 for the day. In the July harvest month, and July harvest month for the hard red, up 12.75 at $5.57.75. Live cattle futures finished the nearby June at 152.30, up 95 cents. August up $1.12.5, up at $150.85. Feeder cattle for the May contract at $220.10, 37.5 cents higher for the day. And the lean hogs finished the lead option June at $83.85. That was $1.30 higher for 100 pounds. July there at $83.75, or rather $83.70, up 35 cents for the day. Of course, you're listening to the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. If you can stay with us tomorrow afternoon for our Commodity Week program immediately following this show, it should be a good one. Commodity Week is our weekly look at the world of agriculture at willag.org.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Checking the outside markets at this hour, crude oil at $60.76 a barrel. That's up $1.78 for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.98.7, 4.1 cents higher. Gasoline on the RBOB, that's the wholesale price, at $2.08.2, 4.1 cents higher. And natural gas for the day at $2.96. That's up 4.5 cents. Ethanol futures finished up in Chicago at $1.57.7. It was 2.1 cents lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up about 23 points at 18,279. The gold futures at $1,205, around $3.75 lower. And the dollar index on the day, and the June contract at 95.345, is down 0.164. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Sunny skies, a high of 65 degrees. That's better than yesterday. West-northwest winds at 11 to 13. Clear tonight, a low of 47. Tomorrow, sunny at a high of 72 degrees. And Friday night, partly cloudy with a low of 50 degrees. Saturday, sunny, a high of 74. Saturday night, mostly cloudy and 57 degrees. On Sunday, showers and thunderstorms, 60% chance. Sunday night, showers and thunderstorms continue, a low of 65. Memorial Day, showers and thunderstorms, cloudy at a high of 79. It'll be breezy on Monday of next week. And Monday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, and a low of 65. By the time we get to Tuesday, the showers and thunderstorms continue. We'll go to a high of 79 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of May, 2015. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises joins us. He's in Waco, Texas this week. Thanks much for being with us, Dan. First, you're safe, and how's the tension in your area?
Yeah, I'm safe, and of course, it's just a talk of the town. Everybody's talking about it, but you can see that they were definitely ready for him. They had every city that had a SWAT team primed and ready on guard on Sunday when those gangs met at that restaurant. And when the fireworks started, they were there and got her squashed pretty quick. So it's amazing how big a deal that was. But and no innocent bystanders were hurt, and it was Baylor's graduation weekend too, so you had a lot of parents and family around, and that was in the newer area of the town, a new mall area, so very fortunate nobody got hurt on that deal.
Indeed. Well, we're glad you're safe, stay put there, and glad you're in Waco and doing well. Tell me about the marketplace as you see it this week. Has anything changed technically for you, especially with the wheat market?
Well, I think, you know, last week when we talked, that was the blow-up day on wheat where we rallied over 30 cents. And basically since that, then the market kind of went into a consolidation phase there on Friday and Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. And now today it started catching yesterday, and now it has resumed the direction of the breakout today with a strong 9 cent advance. I don't like the way the market necessarily sold off in the last 5 minutes. I would like to see a little stronger close. But, yeah, the wheat market now looks awfully good from a technical point of view. What the chartists will look at now is that we do need to take out the high that was made last week on that big surge to the upside. And that would solidify that something has changed from our fundamental front in the wheat market to argue for some higher prices. And, of course, what everybody's watching is the dry weather in the Canadian provinces and the dry weather in Russia. And then the excessive moisture conditions that we've had here in the southern plains, Texas and Oklahoma. The positive thing, though, is pretty well erased the drought area, but now it's got probably a lot of poor quality wheat, which is going to be taken out of the wheat complex, but it'll end up going over into the feed complex. And that's going to be more of a negative to corn, the overall world supplies of wheat have a potential of shrinking. And that's what the rally is all about with the dry weather in Canada and Russia.
Why did corn rally a nickel today?
Corn is following wheat. Yesterday was one of those days that was pretty well driven by that dollar recovery rally. The dollar had declined pretty hard. It got oversold, so we had a sharp rally in the dollar. So that kind of cast a wet blanket across the commodity complex. Now today the dollar resumed the downtrend after that big uptick, and the key here will be that dollar. I think it retraced 30%, 38% of what it lost in the past several weeks, which is a typical bear market retracement, and was stopped dead in its track. So if the dollar would go on next week and make new lows for the decline, I think that would help juice up commodity complex across the board. You can see that crude oil was up $1.77 here today. You're going to get, now the metals were a little soft, but they're ready to resume their upside. But corn kind of did what it needed to do. It was on the verge of just total collapse looking at the chart. But since it was able to rally with wheat here today, it has brought it back to the point where it could close higher for the week and still in good position yet to close out the month higher. And that's going to depend a lot probably what happens next week.
Do we need to be concerned about lower prices for soybeans?
Well, the market's telling us that. And, you know, ever since USDA came out with their acreage numbers back in March, the trade has always kind of been whispering that there's still a couple million acres missing. You know, where will those acres end up going? And then when the Informa number came out, their estimate came out here last week, they indicated that those 2 million acres or thereabouts, they actually got 2.5 million more going to soybeans. That's just about, I mean, that really pulls the plug out from underneath the bean market if we have favorable weather, because even with USDA's numbers, maybe USDA was using a yield a little too high, but, I mean, so far the weather has been conducive to at least attaining USDA's yield was 500 million bushel carry out, and if you add another 2.5 million acres, then you talk about a 600 million million bushel carry out, and that is just totally devastating to any kind of supply demand balance sheet. That would be the worst we've ever been. Now, I've seen a lot of these big balance sheets projected, but they never realized, you know. But at the moment, the trade kind of feels that's possible, and that is why the beans are struggling in here, moving higher or moving lower. We're going to go down and check out that fall low probably at 904 and see what happens at that point.
Is there a reason to believe at all that corn can struggle to stay higher or at current levels if beans collapse?
Like I said, for some time I've talked about this 2-to-1 ratio. So if beans would collapse down to $8, then corn's probably vulnerable to $4 even futures. And, I mean, that's basically we're under $4 now. So I think beans could collapse to $8 and still hold corn at current price levels. The key, I think, to corn is going to be the wheat complex. As I talked to Dave this morning, back before ethanol, corn was just basically a feed grain. And the leaders in the ag complex was either the oilseed or the food grain was wheat. And right now we're at the point here where it looks like wheat wants to move to the upside, and soybeans, oilseeds kind of headed lower, and that puts corn kind of in the middle, which one it wants to follow, and maybe there'll be countervailing influences, and corn will maybe spend most of its time going sideways at these current levels if soybeans do decide to take that nosedive down to $8. But we'll have to see how bearish the trade wants to be before that June 30th report. We could still see more supply changes in that report, and maybe the acres just won't necessarily all get planted because of having too much rain in some areas of the growing region where a lot of bottom ground may just not have got planted, so the acres may not be quite as large as what everybody's looking at. But the trade's prepared for some pretty lofty-looking crop rating levels come Tuesday afternoon, and so far so good for a big crop potential.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Okay, very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Joins us on this Thursday afternoon and reminds me that Monday the markets are closed, that for the Memorial Day holiday, the crop progress reports should be released on Tuesday afternoon. We'll have them for you on Wednesday during the program because they come out, of course, at 3 o'clock Central Time, and we're done and off of the air by that time. So we'll get those out to you as quickly as we can, and you can always check us out on our Commodity Week at Commodity Week Twitter feed. We'll post, and Dave at David A. Dickey on his Twitter feed, and I'm really positive that both of us will post those crop progress reports on Tuesday afternoon if you're wanting to stay up with them. Well, there are a couple of notes in today's agricultural news. The first one comes from the General Assembly, the State House in Springfield, Illinois, where soon operators of farm vehicles will no longer have to apply for commercial driver's license. That is, the House and the Senate have both passed a bipartisan support of Bill 2515. That bill would ensure that Illinois is compliant with federal regulations that would exempt operators in vehicles such as tractors, trucks, or trailers that are registered as farm vehicles with the state from the following regulations: the CDL, or commercial driver's license, controlled substance, alcohol use and testing, physical qualifications and examinations, driver's hours of service, and inspection, repair, and maintenance pertaining to the covered farm vehicles. The legislation also addresses changes to gross combination weight ratings to conform to the federal definition. In 2012, the U.S. Congress passed Moving Ahead for Progress in the 21st Century as a major transportation bill that included two substantial regulatory exemptions for agriculture dealing with hours of service and covering a broad range of farm exemptions from federal motor carrier safety regulations for vehicles classified as covered farm vehicles. Moving from Springfield to Decatur, where Archer Daniels Midland Company has announced it is investing in substantial improvements and expansions to its port facilities in Puerto San Martin in the Argentine state of Santa Fe, enhancing the company's capability to export grain and other agricultural products from that region. The improvements, which will include the construction of a new berth for barge discharge and the addition of storage capacity, are expected to be completed by early 2016. The current export facility in Puerto San Martin have an annual throughput of approximately 2 million metric tons. The improvements will increase annual capacity by 25% to 2.5 million tons, and allowing ADM to reduce its reliance on third-party facilities, which today are limiting the company's, it said, ability to export increasing volumes from Paraguay. The expansion also will allow ADM to move to a higher volume of products through its seamless, fully owned network, helping the company to deliver on its goal of providing customers with an identity-preserved supply chain from origination to processing. Let's move from the state of Illinois now to Washington, D.C. The U.S. House Agriculture Committee moved with lightning speed earlier in the week to pass a bill to repeal mandatory country of origin labeling, that's COOL, for beef, pork, and chicken by a vote of 38-6, just 2 days after the WTO ruled for the fourth time that COOL violates U.S. trade obligations. Canada announced Tuesday it would retaliate with $2 billion in punitive tariffs against U.S. beef, pork, wine, cherries, pasta, corn, and other products. House Ag Chair Mike Conaway answered U.S. defenders of COOL.
Some say we ought to keep waiting until the retaliatory measures have commenced before we consider our next step. That's not something I'm willing to do. We know we face retaliatory sanctions of some amount. Some would estimate that those are the billions of dollars. Regardless of the amount, we should not sit back and let the American businesses be held hostage to the desires of a small minority who refuse to acknowledge that this battle is lost.
Conaway called the Ag Panel's bill a targeted response to the latest WTO ruling that removes uncertainty and brings the U.S. back into trade rule compliance. Only six Democrats voted no, including ranking Ag member Colin Peterson.
I think repealing it is premature. No one wants to see retaliation, but it's important to point out that there are still several steps that have to occur before that would take place. And given what we've seen in the past, it took 15 months for the arbitration panel to issue a ruling in the U.S.-Brazil cotton case. It's unlikely the panel will rule on cool retaliation within their 60-day window.
Peterson says more than 60 other countries have mandatory meat labeling, and the European Union has just adopted a born and raised and reared label, showing a workable North American solution is still possible. Peterson also raised doubts the Senate would pass cool repeals since it started the program in the 2000s. But other Democrats and Republicans insisted cool is just a failure and cited recent USDA studies that show consumers pay little or no attention to country of origin labels, but instead the price and meat quality. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Agricultural programming is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find all of our programming online not long after it airs on our radio stations. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. Ag programming on demand at your time of day. willag.org. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, turning our attention now to what's been happening in the cash grain market. Matt Bennett joins us from Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting. He's out of Windsor, Illinois. Matt, thanks for being with us. I want to stay with the futures markets just a bit. And the idea here that we could take soybeans lower and then turn and maintain what's been happened in the corn market or the price of corn. You've been talking, I think, to some of your clientele about this and how that happens and whether these two really can unhook just slightly at this point.
Yeah, I think one thing we have to remember is these are two totally different markets. You know, I think one thing we've been looking at with our guys is, you know, for all indications, a lot of indications are that guys might end up planting the same or less corn acres than planting intentions number showed. As far as corn goes, but on beans, obviously everyone's talking about more bean plantings. And so whenever we look at that, the USDA is already using a 166.8 on yield to get us to 175 for the carryout next year. If you drop acreage, I mean, boy, it's going to be a tall task to eke out that kind of yield, especially given some of the agronomic things we've seen happen in the last several months due to lack of profitability.
Yeah, so you think, what, fertilizer didn't get put on, and of course then we have rain, it's been a little cold, it's not been a bad start to the corn growing season. Soybeans may have a little different function happening still, but corn is off to an okay start, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the ideal spring, though, more than once, and that this spells, you know, that we could have as good or better crop than last year, but as you said, fertilizer implications are such that maybe there was a little bit less fertilizer. In fact, in some places, a lot less fertilizer put on last fall. Some of that was made up for in the spring, but most companies I've talked to have said they didn't put on near as much as they did the year before. Add to that, some guys backed off a little bit on how elite of genetics they planted this year due to money once again. And so, you know, looking at all those factors, we have to assume that to get to 166.8, in my opinion, we'd almost need as good a weather as we had last summer, given those things we just talked about. And you know, I don't know that we're getting off to that kind of start just yet. And so soybean-wise, if we had 2 or 3 million acres, you know, I could see that spread, you know, going all the way to maybe even a 2-to-1. I know it sounds far-fetched, but it wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Hey, the other item I think that might have changed, and I'm really short on time here, do you suppose they turned the planter population clock back a little bit too?
I think that that's been said, definitely. People have said that that might have happened in a fair amount of instances, so you're definitely right on track there.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time. We'll talk with you again next Thursday.
Yep, thanks, Todd.
That is Matt Bennett with Channel Seeds, and he's with Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. Back in just 2 minutes.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
It's National Strawberries and Cream Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1901, the first U.S. state motor car legislation was enacted to regulate the speed of motor vehicles. The Connecticut law established a speed limit of 12 miles per hour within city limits and 15 miles per hour outside, which were higher than the 8-mile-per-hour city and 12-mile-per-hour county speeds in the bill as originally presented. Also, the car driver was required to reduce speed upon meeting or passing a horse-drawn vehicle and, if necessary, to stop to avoid frightening the horse. In 1916, daylight savings time was introduced in Britain as a wartime measure to save fuel. The legislation was first considered in 1907, but the change failed for lack of support. Few liked the proposal, which called for adjustment of clocks in 4 weekly 15-minute chunks. When reintroduced in 1916 as a one-hour move, it passed. In 1929, the first automatic electric stock quotation board was put into operation by Sutro and Company of New York City. This was the first major advance in market information since the Edison ticker. The board was able to display the open, high, low, and last prices of each stock listed and automatically shifted the figures as changes were made. It was the first of a network of electronically posted blackboards serving the securities industry, activated by a central transmitting station via telegraph lines. The system eventually reached over 700 brokerage offices from coast to coast. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason. Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago is here. Mike, it's been raining quite a little bit. That's very unusual, at least for the plains areas over the last several years. And they have a wheat crop there that I would think would like the rain, but it's been a lot. Tell me about it and what the expectations might be for the next week or so.
Well, it's clearly been too much rain for portions of the plains. If you look at Oklahoma and Kansas and take rainfall from April 1st through today, you can see that one of the wettest periods since at least 1895 is underway. That's 121 years of record, and both states will end up in the top 10 rainfall numbers for that period. So we're talking about an extreme event. For Oklahoma, it's particularly interesting because even if it doesn't rain for the rest of the month, they'll still end up having been the second wettest April-May period since 1895, leaving only 1957 as potentially wetter. It is possible for Oklahoma to move even beyond 1957, making it the wettest April-May in at least 121 years, if they can get about 5 to 6 inches of rain through the end of the month. That will be a bit of a stretch, but we think a solid 2 to 4 inches is on the way for them, which probably is not good for wheat quality across that region. Hasn't been quite as extreme in Kansas, but still, they'll have a top 10 April-May rainfall situation, probably ranking around the fifth to, say, third wettest of the last 121 years in that state.
This begins to be important for folks in the Midwest and the corn market in particular, because wheat that is out of condition often becomes feed wheat and not going into human consumption. The Climate Prediction Center had a report out this morning looking forward. Have you looked at it?
Yeah, they're basically saying that there's a decent chance for a near to cooler than average summer and a near to wetter than average summer across most of the corn and soybean belt. Now, that's generally good for corn and soybean production, but we only really have one big clue right now for the future, and that's the amount of rain that's been falling to our west in the plains over the last 2 months. If you look at some of the wettest periods in Kansas and Oklahoma, like we talked about, we come up with three potential years that will have been similarly wet in both states. Those years were 1915, 1947, and 1957. Once we look at weather in those 3 years in the Corn Belt in the summer, we could see that all three of those years were cooler than normal in June, but then it was a bit mixed in July and August as far as rainfall goes. And interestingly enough, one of the hottest periods on record was in August of 1947 for the Corn Belt. which is even more interesting when you look at Kansas. In 1995 in Kansas, that was the wettest record there as far as rainfall over April, May, dating to 1895. And August 1995 was extremely hot in the Corn Belt. Now, we only have two observations, so we don't want to start forecasting a heat wave in August, and we certainly won't do that. But we do note that that is a bit interesting. As far as rainfall goes, though, that's also mixed, with June having been generally wet across the Corn Belt in 1915, 47, and 57, but then all of the rainfall numbers kind of fall apart by the time you get into July and August.
Thanks so much. That, of course, is Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.